thank you for joining us. We know you're very busy. You have a very full veterinary practice, and you do a lot of teaching and other great work, and so we very much appreciate you taking the time to join us. For those of you who don't know Christina Chambreau, aside from being one of my favorite people, she is a founder of the Academy of Veterinary Homeopathy. She's on the faculty of the National Center for Homeopathy Summer School, vice president in charge of the Veterinary Advice Line, which maybe she can share a little bit more about that. It's a referral service so people can find the best care for their animal-specific problems. And she teaches courses around the country to lay and veterinary students. And she writes the Healthy Animal Journal, and she's just an all-around excellent homeopathic practitioner and educator, and one of the most lovely people you'll ever want to meet in your life. So thank you again for joining us, Christina.
Well, you are so welcome. I always love having interviews with Kim because you are one of my favorite people, and we particularly love to eat Indian food together. I'm just drooling to get back to Toronto to have those samosas again.
Oh, I know. They're pretty good, yeah. And listen, before we get started with the call, Christina, I just want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. We're going to have about a 45 or 50-minute formal interview, and then maybe the last 10 minutes or so we'll open it up and let people ask their own questions. Before we start, Christina, you mentioned earlier that the AVH conference is coming up soon in Savannah, Georgia. Can you just give us, do you have the dates there available?
Yep, I do.
And so, could you also tell us about the classes you're going to be teaching as well?
The wonderful thing about the AVH conference is that it is open to anyone. It's not just limited to veterinarians. Now, the conference itself on October 23rd, 24th, and 25th is geared for veterinarians who are trained in homeopathy and are using homeopathy in their practice. So the lecturers are speaking at that level. They're not speaking at an introductory level. So they're going to be throwing out words like rubric and repertory without miasms, you know, with no definitions given because it is geared at that veterinary and professional homeopathic level. However, it's wonderful, even if some of it goes over some of your heads, that it's wonderful to be there and to be hearing about all of the different cures that happen and different ways of thinking about approaching animals' healing. And some people who come have been a homeopath longer than most of the veterinarians, a homeopath trained to treat people, and of course they often treat animals at the same time. I know, Kim, you've been asked over the years what people can do to treat their animals, and you've treated animals. So the pre-day, for anybody who's not comfortable with homeopathy already, or if you have friends who you'd like to get more introduced to homeopathy and you like what you hear tonight, I'll be teaching a one-day introduction to holistic health for animals, or I'm sorry, an introduction to homeopathy for animals. And so what I'll be covering on Thursday will be what can be cured with homeopathy in animals, tons of cases. I'll go over the principles, the philosophy, how remedies are made. I'll then be going into how do you actually treat an animal? So how do you take a case? What's different in taking a case in an animal than in a person? Moving into the repertory and the books that we use to select the remedies. So I'll talk about the repertory and the Materia Medica and the Organon and remedy relationship books. Then we'll move into how do you actually select the remedy by using those books. And finally, once you've given a remedy, how do you know what to do next? Are you actually getting a cure or merely temporary help, palliation, or sort of made things worse by suppressing? The current symptoms went away quickly, but the animal is sicker overall. And how do you see that in animals? And what are the early warning signs of illness? And then it's going to be really wonderful because we'll go over some animal cases using radar. Kim's going to work with me on that and do some animal cases with me on radar. So it's going to be an awesome day, and you'd be well set up for the rest of the conference, even if you're brand new to homeopathy, to be able to be in the conference and not be totally at sea. And if you know of a veterinarian who you'd like to get started in homeopathy, they will learn enough in this one day to decide, this interests me. I would like to pursue homeopathy. And also, everybody will leave with a few remedies that they can use for first aid with the animals. And it's going to be in downtown Savannah in a lovely hotel, and I've been promised that the weather is going to be great.
Well, I know it's going to be a wonderful day, and I'm personally very excited about it. So, Christina, you know, I thought perhaps we could start tonight's interview by just simply asking you a very kind of general question, just, you know, because maybe some people are not that familiar with the how homeopathy works or the power of homeopathy, and I'm just, maybe you could give us some kind of sense of how homeopathy can work in terms of treating very difficult types of conditions.
Well, it's so wonderful to realize that there are ways that animals and people can be cured of really serious conditions. One dog came to me that had a tumor that was growing over its eye, coming probably from the conjunctiva tissue of the eye, and it was red and raw and sort of bleeding often if they bumped into it, and it had been progressing, and the veterinarians had removed it once, the conventional veterinarian, and it had just come right back again. And this was in a 12-year-old German Shepherd who had also lost her hearing, become very stiff, and quality of life you would put on a scale of 0 to 10 was at around a 4, and the tumor made it maybe even worse. And with homeopathic treatment over a period of about 4 months, the tumor entirely went away, and the eye was 100% back to normal. The dog acted on a scale of 0 to 10. The activity level and interest and health of the dog overall was up to an 8. She went through, the husband didn't understand homeopathy at all and was very skeptical until one remedy was given, and for the next 3 days, the dog heard perfectly and then became deaf again. I find with older dogs who've become deaf that we can get periods of time where they can hear, but it doesn't seem to hold all the time. But that, I mean, that is just incredible to have that happen. And then amazing things happen with remedies because so often we feel that many of the symptoms that animals have are just normal, that we need to put up with dogs and cats having tartar on their teeth. Having tartar on their teeth is really indicates an energetic imbalance. And when a dog is healthy and a cat is healthy and being fed an appropriate diet, the tartar just falls off of their teeth. I had a case of a young dog who had anxiety before shows, so they were going to not be able to show the dog that much. He loved to show. He loved to be in the ring. But he had copious diarrhea for as soon as he knew they were headed to the show. He had diarrhea all over the place. So he so loved being in the ring that it made me think of the remedy lycopodium, because they lyca the podium. They like to be performing. But they often have some nervousness ahead of time. And this dog was also a bully. He would, when nobody was looking who was higher up, he would nip at the legs of the dogs who were sort of under him. And if the owner showed up, he would act as if nothing had happened, as if, oh, it wasn't him. So when I gave the lycopodium, I think 1 M or 10 M, and within 2 months, the dog was 100% normal, and the owner said, you know, he was born with tartar on his teeth. But 1 month after the remedy, the tartar just fell off. And now, 2 months after the remedy, his teeth are white, pearly white. And so we knew then that that remedy had acted on a deep level. And the dog went on. I don't think he ever was treated again. And I lost track of him when he was about 12. So, and he was still perfectly healthy at 12. So homeopathy works. The key thing about homeopathy that I like to remind people, because so many people forget, is it's not really about giving a homeopathic remedy, a medicine that's been made in a particular way. What's the magic of homeopathy is when you can look at all the symptoms a dog or cat has had and has currently and use that to identify the underlying energy imbalance, the vital force imbalance that exists. And then you can find a medicine that, through the testing, has those similar symptoms. And when you can do that, that's the key, like cures like. When you can find a medicine that matches, that's when these miracles happen. Too often, people leap into homeopathy and buy books that are excellent, that I recommend, like Don Hamilton's Homeopathic Care of Cats and Dogs, or Christopher Day's Homeopathic Treatment of Small Animals. Wonderful books, but they don't read the book. They just go to the page that has a few remedies suggested for the problem their animal has now. So they miss the real magic of homeopathy. And animals are helped often that way, but they don't get the deep, powerful cures. The real power of homeopathy comes when you can make that match of finding the remedy that, when it was tested and in clinical practice, really matches the animal that you're treating.
As you were talking, Christina, it reminded me again another reason that I like the AVH conferences so much, which is that they have cases of real serious conditions, you know, animals with serious diseases on videotape, and they're given remedies and they're cured, and it really dispels the whole myth that homeopathy is simply placebo. And so just to hear you recount these stories is wonderful.
Yes, and now people sometimes tell us it's placebo because the owners believe in it.
Right.
But my very first case was definitely not that, and it also wasn't great homeopathy, because I didn't understand anything. Someone had, a veterinarian locally who never did understand homeopathy and quit practicing it, had given me two remedies to treat bladder problems. Again, not the homeopathic approach. I don't want people trying it this way. But I had these two remedies sitting on the shelf. It was Urtica Urens and Cantharis. And my boss was examining a cat who'd been on antibiotics for 3 years for bladder problems. Every time they withdrew the antibiotic, I mean constantly for 3 years, every time they started to go off the antibiotics, the bladder would inflame again and the cat would be in distress. And they were starting to think about euthanizing the cat because there were secondary problems from the antibiotics. And I said to my boss, I said, well, you know, Dave Taman gave me this stuff for bladder problems. Shall we try it? And he said, oh, I don't know, talk to the owner. And I literally said almost that to the owner. I said, ma'am, a local veterinarian has given me these remedies that are homeopathic medicines used to treat bladder problems. So if you'd like to try it, we can. And she said, well, how does it work? I went, I don't know, ma'am.
Cassini, I never knew this story. It's great.
I have no idea how it works. And I've got to say, I cannot remember if I gave both Urtica and Cantharis or one or the other. I know they weren't given for more than 2 weeks. And that cat, for the next 9 months I was at the practice, had no more bladder problems.
That's great.
So no placebo effect at all there.
That's great.
Now, I can't say if that cat was cured because I had no idea of the concept
right,
of cure,
right,
palliation and suppression, but
right,
it certainly was. But
certainly there wasn't action from the remedy, for
definitely
sure.
Definitely it wasn't, no, placebo from any of us.
Right. That's great. So, Christina, what about, you've talked about the ability of homeopathy to treat very serious health problems, even, you know, neurological or cancer, things like that. What about just in terms of just generally extending the lifespan of the animal? And also, what about the use of homeopathy in hospice care?
Well, it really is. You know, the time to use homeopathy, one of the things I strongly encourage people for themselves as well as for their animals is, and please, those of you who are listening to this call who are already really excited about homeopathy and love it, speak about this to everybody you know that has animals. The time to start using homeopathy and the holistic approach is when they're born, when they're a puppy, when the parents are conceiving, not waiting until they get really ill and then beginning this approach. And then it's also wonderful all the way through to the very last breath. Homeopathy is, it's interesting, I was at the second annual veterinary hospice conference at Davis, California at the beginning of September, and I spoke there. Many of the veterinarians there are very committed to gently easing pets' death by hospice or very gentle euthanasia when the time was appropriate. Because they only have painkillers, basically, and sub-Q fluids, they don't have a lot of things they can use with animals in hospice. And with homeopathy, it's not, in a way, it's not hospice. We have animals that have been given a terminal diagnosis, like a cat in severe renal failure or a dog with cancer, and it looks like they're going to die. If we can find the similimum for that animal or even a close remedy, then often they will completely turn around and go on and live for 2 to 4 to 8 to 10 years longer. You wouldn't think of it as being a hospice case, but it is in a way. Dr. Ed Schaefer, who's this wonderful homeopath who works with dairy cows as well as small animals in Pennsylvania, near Lancaster, Pennsylvania, was called out on a Friday to do a death exam on a milking cow. Well, she had gone down in the rear and so was going to have to be slaughtered. But he said, you know, I can't write the certificate today because the knacker is not going to come out until Monday. So I have to come back on Monday to write the certificate. And they said, oh, you know, okay. And while he was there looking at the cow, he said, well, what's to lose? And he pulled out 10M phosphorus, gave a dose of it to the cow, and left. Didn't charge him, didn't tell him. And 6 months later, he was at the farm, and he said, you know, you never called me back about that cow. Whatever happened with her? And they said, oh, she completely recovered, and she's become our best milker. With that one dose of phosphorus 10M in an animal that was ready to be killed, she went on to live 8 years and be the best milker in the herd. When you really find the similimum, awesome miracles happen. Now, how often do we really find that similimum? Well, you know, not all the time, that's for sure. But homeopathy helps in spite of that. So in hospice care, you may not find the remedy that turns an animal around, but if you have a cat who's up at night and restless and crying and pacing about and has a poor appetite, you can find a remedy that matches those symptoms. It may not be the deep cure, but it has the cat stay comfortable as the life force slowly drains away. So homeopathy is useful in the young. Dr. Pitcairn had a case of a puppy whose baby teeth were still in place. No, whose permanent teeth had not come in. There was one canine that hadn't erupted, and the dog was like a year and a half old. And he, you know, was treating something else in the dog and gave the remedy Calcarea carbonicum or Calcarea phosphoricum, which was fitting all of the symptoms that the dog had. And within a week, that tooth started erupting, and it ended up coming in all the way. So whether you're treating the young or the old, the homeopathic remedies can be very powerful.
That's great, Christina. You know, Christina, one of the things that a lot of people have questions about is whether or not they should vaccinate their animals. And I'm just curious if you could just share your opinion about vaccination in general for animals, and then also if somebody feels that their animal is perhaps toxic from vaccination, are there certain rubrics or remedies that you might think about?
Excellent. I really love you asking that question because there's a lot of myth and folklore in homeopathy around vaccinations. Let's broaden that a little bit into communicable diseases in general, contagious diseases in general, and the approach to use with them. And part of it is we tend to get this shoot from the hip, let's look for a quick fix that fits everybody, is how the world has us thinking. And so calls like this are wonderful because we can get back in touch again with what we're really looking for, which is true healing, and we're looking for this energetic match of remedies to the individual. So the question I ask most people is, how many years in a row do you get measles, mumps, rubella, polio, diphtheria shots? Do you get them every year of your life until you die? And you know, so far, nobody has said yes. Well then, if you don't get shots every year, why should your dog be getting distemper, hepatitis, leptospirosis, parainfluenza, parvovirus, coronavirus, Lyme disease, bordetella every year of their life, and rabies every 3 years, or every year, depending on the practice, and the cats get an equal, not quite as many, number of shots? Why should they get them every year? It does not make any sense. And people go, well, you know, recently my veterinarian is saying to do them every 3 years. Well, if you have distemper and parvo, which are viral vaccines that last a lifetime, why should you do them every 3 years? The AVMA, all of the veterinary colleges, all the veterinary organizations are now recommending at every 3 years or less. They recognize that vaccinations cause harm, like tumors at the injection site, autoimmune diseases, and they realize we're doing them too often. They're a little nervous to say, don't do them at all. But as homeopaths, we're bold people. So I say the best, my two cats personally are not vaccinated at all. When people are really holistic and really comfortable with homeopathy and holistic approaches, and they have a veterinarian to work with who's comfortable with it, then they often choose, like me, to not even give puppy or kitten vaccines or goat or horse or cow baby vaccines, because we assume that they'll get exposed, they'll develop a mild disease that we'll treat, and then they'll be really solidly protected for the rest of their life. I am also okay with people giving a few vaccines to puppies and kittens. So puppies, distemper and parvo only. Kittens, panleukopenia, the cat distemper only. And giving one or two of each one of those, and not any of the others. And there are many articles that are out there. I've got some information on my website under my practice tab that talks about the rationale for all of that. But in general, homeopathic veterinarians feel that vaccines and all the drugs, all the chemicals that come with the vaccines as adjuvants are very damaging, shorten the lifespan, cause autoimmune diseases, weaken the vital force profoundly in many, many animals. And so I definitely recommend not vaccinating. Now, rabies is a viral vaccine. It is good for life. And I had an immunologist from the University of Georgia tell me that. However, you need to stay legal. There is a wonderful listserv to get on that I strongly recommend. You go to Yahoo Groups, and it's also in my practice handout on vaccines. You go to Yahoo Groups and look for the Just Say No to Vax listserv. And it's something like JSTSAYNO, the numeral 2, VACCS. And their archives and their articles are excellent there and give you a lot of support if you need it. Do not let anybody force you to do vaccines. The next question people have is, well, should I do a titer where you draw blood and look for the antibodies to the particular disease? And I say, do you do titers for measles and mumps and polio for yourself? No. So then why should you be doing it for your animals? What Dr. Ron Schultz says of the University of Wisconsin Veterinary College, and he's an immunologist, he said, if you want to do a titer, do one titer after their initial vaccines, maybe when they're 6 months to a year old. If antibodies are present, that means their immune system was activated and they're now protected for life, whether the antibodies stay there or not. So that's the main approach. Now, some people say when you give a vaccine, because like I say, you need to give the rabies vaccine, you follow it immediately with a homeopathic remedy and that will take care of the problem. Well, that doesn't make sense with what I just said, does it? You know, I said we look at the symptoms that are present and select a remedy to match those symptoms. So if And then we look at what people give, suggest giving after vaccines. They suggest giving Thuja or sulfur or Leadum or Hypericum or a nosode made from the drug, from the disease the animal is being vaccinated for, or a nosode made from the actual vaccine. Well, wait a minute. If there's six different suggestions, which one are you going to pick? So my suggestion is you don't do homeopathy after a vaccine. Instead, and I've got one caveat on that. There is an exception to that. I'll get to it in a minute. Instead, make sure the animal is as healthy as possible when you give the vaccine and use a form of energy healing called Reiki, which is a non-specific healing the body energy healing. And you can hold the syringe in your hand, and it helps dispel or shift the vibration so it doesn't harm the animal as much. And then you Reiki the injection site and Reiki the entire animal. Now, whether you do the Reiki or not, it's really important to look at those early warning signs of illness, goop in the corner of the eye, doggy odor, soft stools, bad breath, anything that would indicate that this dog or cat or horse or cow is not completely healthy. And then you use those symptoms to find the remedy, including using the rubric in generalities for effects of vaccinations. So you limit the remedies you choose to those remedies that are known to cause problems, have caused problems in people after vaccinations. And so the rubric in synthesis is vaccination after. And so that's the main thing. Now, if you know that an animal has had a particular reaction to a vaccine in the past, or you know that their constitutional remedy, the remedy that seems to help them the most in the past, has been, say, listen, then when you give the rabies, I would give the listen after the rabies. I would give their constitutional. So if you know there's been a problem, then you can go ahead and treat, because those symptoms, you already know the pattern of illness of this animal. But when you have a 10-week-old puppy that's healthy and isn't showing any symptoms and is doing absolutely fine, there's no need to do a remedy unless you see symptoms present. Want to comment on that before I talk about nosodes, Kim?
No, please go ahead.
And the second thing that people tend to do, now, by the way, I used to do this. So people who have notes out there from me from 30 years ago when I was teaching or 25 years ago when I was teaching will see this elaborate protocol to do after every vaccine. It was to give Thuja 6C once a day or twice a day, I forget now, for a week, then sulfur, then Thuja, then sulfur. So you treated for a month after. But that's just because I didn't understand homeopathy, and neither did most of the veterinarians. Now we understand the principles that are in the Organon taught by Hahnemann. That's the key, is to understand the principles. And then things like this, you go, okay, well, it doesn't make sense. Would I give Thuja because it helps smallpox vaccines and often is needed after vaccines, or Hypericum for needle punctures, or Leadum for bites of poisonous animals, or, which one shall I give? So the second area we're going to talk about, which is nosodes. Nosodes are homeopathic remedies made from diseased body substances. And we have nosodes made at different pharmacies for every animal disease that's out there. So there's a distemper nosode, a parvo nosode, a Calici virus nosode, an equine encephalitis nosode, Clostridium for the goats. So you can purchase these nosodes. But here's the thing again. How did I say homeopathy worked? You have a vital force that's out of balance and therefore producing symptoms. You use those symptoms to find symptoms that were produced in testing by a remedy, and therefore you say there's an energetic match. You give that like cures like, you give that similimum, and it should clear up the problem. Well, where does that fit then? If you give a nosode of parvo and distemper, Do you give them at the same time? Do you mix them together? How long would they, how do you know what energetic pattern they have? And how long would it last? It doesn't, it just makes no sense at all. And I don't want to take a lot more time on this, but the bottom line with nozodes is they're excellent after exposure. If you have an animal that's not symptomatic and other animals in the litter, say puppies in the litter, are showing some diarrhea and everybody was exposed to parvo, that would be the time to give the parvo nozode to the healthy animals. Occasionally, we will use the nozode in ill animals where we can't seem to get a grip on which remedy is most similar in a case. So if it's a one-sided case, there's just one symptom, we may try the nozode, or we've tried several well-selected remedies and they don't work, then we may come in with that nozode as an intercurrent, or we may use other miasmatic remedies as an intercurrent when we're treating. But to use nozodes prophylactically ahead of time when they haven't been exposed makes no sense. And Dr. Ron Schultz actually did an experiment at the University of Wisconsin with dogs, and none of them were protected by the nozodes. So that's it. And finally, vaccines, in our opinion, of almost all the homeopathic vets, I can't think of one who doesn't believe this, we feel that vaccines are the biggest culprit in having animals live shorter lives, full of behavior problems, full of cancer, et cetera. So, cool it on the vaccines.
You know, Christina, it's, I was just going to ask you, because you were talking about vaccinations, and we all know that vaccinations are responsible for a variety of different types of degenerative conditions, including cancer, as you mentioned, but even autoimmune diseases also. What's your experience of using homeopathy to treat actually cancer and autoimmune diseases in animals, and can you share a little bit about that?
Absolutely. And again, it really is finding the characteristic symptoms, finding the modalities, finding the remedy that matches, and then finding a potency that can be used gently enough not to stress the animal too far. An example of an autoimmune case was a collie named Ben, who after his, like at around 6 or 8 months, his mouth erupted in blisters after his last set of vaccinations. And they treated it with steroids, and then he became lame, drinking a lot of water. And if they decreased the steroids, the blisters came back. They were in his throat, in his mouth. His dog couldn't eat. He was lethargic. He was, for a year, he had a horrible life. And all of the tests for autoimmune diseases came back positive. And the veterinarians basically threw up their hands and said, I doubt he's going to make it to 2 years. So I started treating the dog. And, you know, so I would go to the mouth section of the repertory and look up mouth ulcers. I'd go to throat ulcers. I'd go to generalities, ailments after vaccinations. And he had bizarre reactions to drugs. So I used ailments after medicaments or drugs, and we slowly, just excruciatingly slowly, moved this dog forward. We were able to get him off the steroids, and then it took about another 6 months before he was really well. And an interesting symptom that appeared, given the Herring's Law of Cure of symptoms moving from the top down, from the front to the back in a dog, is when his mouth was completely clear of blisters, about 2 or 3 weeks later, his entire rectal area erupted. All the mucous membranes were solid blisters. That dog was, I felt so sorry for him. But once those blisters cleared through, then he was well on his way to a cure.
Wow.
And let's see, he lived to be 12, which is okay for a collie. Many collies these days die around 10. But given his, you know, difficult beginning, 12 was good. And he had a great life. We treated him occasionally over the years.
Oh, that's great.
Yep.
Christine, you've been talking about, you know, homeopathy treating some very serious types of health issues, cancer, autoimmune diseases, tumors, all kinds of things. is it your experience that you're using homeopathy exclusively, or are you using other therapies in conjunction with homeopathy, or just hygiene as well? What is your approach when you're working with animals?
It really depends on the animal, whether we do just homeopathy or do something else as well. But there's, as with people, as Hahnemann talked about obstacles to cure. Now, when you read the Organon, definitely some of the things that Hahnemann said were an obstacle to cure, we would no longer consider them obstacles to cure, like playing chess. So with dogs and cats and even other animals, as Hahnemann suggested, you need a good basic diet. So diet is one of the things that is critical when you're treating an animal who's ill, but also is critical to get an animal started right from the beginning. And my question for everyone is, what's the best food for people? What's the best food for you to eat? Fresh, locally sustainably raised, or processed, even if it's organic?
Is this a trick question?
No, it's not, except for some people.
Okay.
There are a few people who actually tell me it's better to eat processed food. So for them, maybe it was a trick question. But truly, what is the best for people? Fresh food and locally, sustainably raised if possible. And yet, what do we feed our dogs and cats? Dry food and canned food, by and large. So the best diet for dogs and cats is fresh food. Raw meaty bones, pureed vegetables, raw is best, but cooked is okay as long as it's fresh. And then, again, that's a whole talk, but that's on my website on the practice page, and you can do Google searches, tons of books out there, everybody with slightly different opinions. No grains is very important as long as if your animal is ill at all. They should have no grains. And, of course, what's in most pet foods is grains because they're cheap. Cancer oncologists that are conventional veterinarians say no grains if they have cancer. So, therefore, if it's no grains for cancer and autoimmune diseases, definitely it would be no grains for overall health. Now, if you have a dog or a cat that's so healthy, just glowing with health, you can experiment and give them some grains and have that be part of their diet. To sort of help the planet from too much meat being raised, but which Dr. Pitcairn's newest book is advocating that more. As long as you're watching the early warning signs of illness and you're keeping track in a journal, in a book, in a notebook, keeping track of all the symptoms that your animal is showing, then you can tweak the diet. The second thing is no vaccinations. The third is decrease the number of toxins that the animals are exposed to. Remember, those poor guys, their nose is right near the ground for most of them, and their feet are walking over those pesticided grasses. So the fewer chemicals you can have in your house, in your laundry, on your yard, on your neighbor's yard, the healthier your animals are going to be. Some animals can tolerate tons of chemicals with no problems. Some are super susceptible. Same thing for vaccines and diet. It's all individual. Another key thing, and I have a great case of this one, another key piece is for you to, whoever is around the animals, the healthier they can be, the healthier the animals will be. I was talking to a woman today whose cat has been not eating well, and she said, you know, my husband feels the cat's fine even though he's lost weight, and he just puts the food down and the cat eats. And when I'm feeding him, it's like I'm so worried about how, is he going to eat? Is he going to die? Is he going to be okay? That he doesn't eat as well for me. So your emotional state can be very important to how the animals are reacting. Also, some animals appear to take on the ailments of their people to try to heal them. And so for that reason, the more work you can do to keep yourself healthy, the better it will be for your animals. And it's not a direct correlation always, but it's one more piece to look at. I had one woman whose cats had major behavioral problems, particularly when she was going away, lots of anxiety and nervousness. And we were able with homeopathy to help about 80%. And there was bladder problems and lots of other stuff, diarrhea. But we couldn't completely heal. And then she became a Christian Scientist and started doing these healing meditations and visualizing health, and symptoms didn't really exist. It was just sort of a figment of her imagination and her of not just that, but she could go, she would call me and go, Dr. Chambreau, my cat, whatever she had to say. And I would go, have you been doing your Christian Science work? And she went, no, I haven't been. And she would go to the park, do her work. She lived in New York City, so high stress for a cat anyway. She'd go to the park, do her meditations, and come home, and the cats would be fine. It wouldn't cure everything, but it did that extra 20%.
That's great.
Flower essences go wonderfully with homeopathy, especially for animals that have behavior problems. I know Pat from Connecticut has she's rescued 379 ferals and found homes for them and is dealing with a lot of anxiety-type problems. And sometimes, even though I've been adamant on this call about wait till their symptoms, find the remedy that matches the symptoms, there are times, like when you're working with a lot of feral animals or working in a herd situation, where you sort of can do a genus epidemicus, where you look at all the symptoms that you commonly see and then give a remedy for that. So if you notice that all the cats coming in, or many of the cats coming in, are in a state of terror, you may just routinely give aconite to everybody when they walk in the door and then see what happens and then start to individualize the treatment. One homeopathic veterinarian in Sweden gives arnica to cats when they're rescued because he feels that not only did they suffer physical abuse, which might need the arnica, but that they've suffered mental brain bruising. And for that, so the arnica seems to help in that situation. So there are times where you might have remedies that you give on a regular basis, you know, on a more routine basis like that.
You know, Christina, one of the questions that we get a lot is, you know, we'll get people, because we're very oriented towards, you know, a classical Hahnemanian approach to homeopathy, and we oftentimes get people who call us up who are seeing a veterinarian homeopath, and maybe the veterinarian practices a different way, doesn't practice the classical mm-hmm. approach. What do you tell people about that type of a situation?
Well, you know, I am classically trained, and that's my joy. However, after doing this for 25 years, animals are difficult to treat. It's sometimes difficult to get enough symptoms to find the similimum. And I have seen animals who have been cured, really cured, when combination remedies have been used, or somebody's used two or three remedies alternating with each other. And that's why when I was asked to write a book, I wrote The Healthy Animal's Journal, because what I want everyone to do is to make a list of all the symptoms the animals ever had, the ones they have now, plus the early warning signs of illness. And then I don't really care what treatment they do. Classical homeopathy, sequential therapy, combination therapy, acupuncture, Reiki, hands-on, flower essences, you know, the myriad of treatments that are out there. And then you carefully reevaluate those symptoms according to homeopathic perspectives of cure, palliation, and suppression. My experience has been, currently I've got to warn people, a large number of holistic veterinarians are learning the heal approach of drainage remedies and the combination heal products, because it's being taught a lot and it fits more the model that the conventional veterinarian is used to of, here's the problem, here's the formula that you use. And I have talked to some of the veterinarians seriously about the results they're getting, and they are getting some animals that appear to be cured with that. The problem is, when you give combination remedies or you prescribe sequential therapy where you do a remedy without really taking the case each time and finding the similimum, the closest remedy you can get, often it gets rid of superficial symptoms or gets rid of sort of the current symptoms. And because you can't ask the animal, how are you feeling, what's your mental state, you then are left with nothing to prescribe on until they get sick again. And it's sort of like if a dog comes in with a tumor and is otherwise pretty healthy, and you cut off the tumor, and they say, well, I want you to cut off the tumor and then treat my animal homeopathically. Well, you'll have no way of knowing if the remedies are working or not if the tumor has been cut off. So combination remedies and heal remedies, I find, often do that, where they sort of cut off some of the symptoms, so you have very little left to work with. And then it's hard, I find, to deeply cure animals that way. Now, in animals that are much older and looking at hospice care, or very seriously, you know, and you've tried, you've worked with somebody doing classical homeopathy and maybe that hasn't worked for some reason, then there's definitely a place for these other approaches. But I will say I sometimes do see animals cured. So I am not, you know, saying you got to do it one way. I think classical homeopathy is more elegant. And I think the deepest power of homeopathy lies when you're able to find remedies that are a close match.
Christina, you know, we're kind of running short on time, but I just wanted to ask you one more question, and it's about homeopathic potency and dose, because it's a question that you hear all the time, and people, you know, get asked, like, what is their method? Do they practice, you know, dry dose and wait, or do they, you know, put the remedy in solution and succuss it in between, and, you know, XC potencies, LMs? I'm just curious, in your practice, do you use a variety of approaches or one approach? How do you do it?
I use a variety of approaches. About 4 years ago, I switched to the fifth edition Organon method of diluting and shaking, you know, making a stock bottle, shaking it and diluting it each time. And something I want to highly suggest that everybody do, this is your best takeaway from this talk, is when you make up liquid dilutions, whether you're doing just a single dose in liquid or whether you're doing the liquid and shaking it, or whether you're doing LM and shaking it and then diluting it further, offer the dilution to the dog or cat. See if they will stick their tongue in it. Just one lap is enough. Just one sticking of the tongue is enough. Because often animals are wise enough to know what they need. I had a woman just today who, she'd had to give the remedy, it was twice a day for 3 days I had told her to do, or 2 days. The first 3 doses or 4 doses, the cat wouldn't take it. She had to put a few drops in the mouth. The next time she offered it, the cat looked at the bowl of water, stuck his foot in, and then licked his foot. And he did that 3 times. So I tried the liquid dilution for 4 years, and I've not found a huge difference between dry, liquid, and LM. So I use them, I lean towards the fifth edition dilution because people can pick up the 30C in the health food store. If people are local to me, I'll use LMs. If animals are fragile, have a lot of tissue changes, a lot of pathology, there's a risk of death, a risk of severe inflammation, a risk of flare-up of the anger, then I really lean towards the LM potencies. The majority of homeopathic veterinarians classically trained are in the U.S. are still using, and in England, are still using dry potencies.
Go ahead, Christine. I'm sorry.
They all work.
Yeah.
That was all I
just wanted to let, for people who are not familiar with what Christine is talking about here, the Organon went through 6 different editions, and from the 4th and the 5th and the 6th editions, he changed his method of potency and dose. He went from, in the 4th edition, the dry dose and weight approach, to the 5th edition, which they call the split dose, where he was still using C potencies but diluting them in liquid and succussing between each dose, and then in the 6th edition, he's using the LM method. So just in case people didn't know that, I wanted to give them some...
Absolutely. And I do want to say there's a... Sue Armstrong has a practice in... she's from Britain, but she has a practice up in Canada. I think it's in BC. And pretty big practice. And they're using exclusively the liquid and succussing and further diluting method. And they're finding... They really feel it is much better and that they're getting great success with it. Again, I've had mixed results.
Great. So, Christina, I want to open it up and let some other people ask some questions. Before I do that, is there anything you'd like to share in terms of any things that you're doing? I know you've told us a little about the AVH conference that's coming up. Any other projects you're working on, or would you like to just give people the URL for your website or contact information, whatever you'd like to share about
absolutely.
Yourself?
Absolutely. No, nothing specific. Right now, my focus is really on getting as many people as we can to that intro course in Savannah, as well as to the conference, because it's such an awesome opportunity. And the website to register for that is the AVH, which is the Academy of Veterinary Homeopathy. So it would be www.theavh.org. And you can also link to it through my website, which is my name. So it's www.christinachambreau.com.
And that's Christina, C-H-R-I.
STINACHAMBREAU. And you can also get me directly if you forget that for some reason. My email is healthyanimals@AOL.com. So that's an easy one.
Great.
So,
okay, well, Christine, I'm going to go ahead and unmute the line.
Great.
And let other people ask some questions. So does anybody have a question for Dr. Christina Chambreau?
What was the after Christina Chambreau at where.com?
No, just ChristinaChambreau.com
oh,
is the website.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yep.
I have a question about roundworms and cats.
Yep.
Do you get much success using, say, Cinna in roundworms?
Nope.
No, you don't.
Nope, I haven't. Basically, young cats, very young cats and dogs, I say use... For people who aren't super, super holistic, I just have them go ahead and use the regular chemical wormers from the veterinary clinic. They're very safe. They get rid of the worms at a stage where the cat or dog could really die from them. And at the same time, I would work up the constitutional remedy to boost the overall health and make sure they're on a good diet. When animals are older and get worms, I look for whatever their constitutional remedy is, or I use flower essences and like diatomaceous earth or some of the herbal preparations for the worms.
Other questions for Dr. Christina Chambreau?
What did you give, which remedy did you give the dog with all the blisters on its butt?
Oh, I think I went through five or six different ones.
Oh, is Roos Tox one of them?
Don't think so.
Real quickly, I wanted to tell you I had to vaccinate my two dogs because I was going to go to Hawaii. And immediately after, the older one was about 10 at the time, had a stroke, rabies vaccination. And the younger one was about 5 and got a severe case of...
Are you still there?
Well, let me just comment on that.
Okay.
So definitely one dose of rabies vaccine in susceptible animals can cause a problem, and that's why I strongly suggest that people only give it when they're healthy, use Reiki, use flower essences. Lynn Peck, a veterinarian in Florida, is now coming up with that we need to be giving calcium, that as soon as a vaccine is given, calcium levels are depleted for some reason. So she's doing a lot of research in that area, so we don't have a lot to say about it. But there's plenty to do, and then have the remedies ready to go if they start showing symptoms.
Great. The person who was asking the question, you got cut off. Are you back again? No? Okay, anybody else who would like to ask a question? We've got about 5 minutes left here.
Kim, can I make a comment?
Is this Joyce?
Yes, uh-huh.
Of course, please, Joyce.
Recently I was teaching a class and I met a woman who raises cattle. And she was telling us that when they get ready to take the cattle to slaughter, they take arnica and aconite and spray it all over the animals before they leave, and that they are totally calm when they go to slaughter.
That is excellent, and that's exactly what I was talking about. When you're dealing with certain situations, then you use the same remedy over and over again, because all those cattle are in that same condition.
Right.
You know, they might do just as well with just aconite or just arnica, but there's no problem with using both of them.
Joyce, do you remember that very interesting Angustura Vera case with the sheep that all had a kind of a tetanus type of condition?
Yeah.
That was a pretty amazing situation. I'll have to send you that case, Christina.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Sounds great.
Probably the most amazing thing I've ever read in homeopathy. Other questions for Christina Chambrot?
Became vegetarians.
Say that again?
It would be a good thing if people became vegetarians, so not that many animals would be slaughtered.
Yeah, they wouldn't need the arnica and the aconite.
I have a question about potency for smaller animals like dogs and cats, as well as for maybe birds. I'm wondering if you tend to use lower potencies for those animals, or do you find there's a... Because I did hear that you were using 1 mg and 10 mg in some cases.
The potency has nothing to do with the size of the animal.
Right.
The potency is just like finding the similimum. So you're trying to find the potency that's very slightly higher than the level of disease in the animal. So if the illness is at a functional level, like behavior problems or itching a lot but there's no skin damage, then you would use a higher potency, especially if it was a younger animal. If you had a little old cat with just a fourth of her kidneys left, then you'd use LMs or low potencies for gentle pushes. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you.
Now, with birds, often you need higher potencies because they haven't been as suppressed in general.
Right.
So we do find that often wildlife needs higher potencies in general, and birds need higher potencies, but not always. Again, if you had a major crop problem, that if you got inflammation in there, it might choke, then I'd definitely go with a lower potency. And, of course, it always matters if how sure you are of your remedy. If you're not as sure of your remedy, which often happens in animals, you want to go on the lower side.
Right. And by lower, you're talking sort of like a 6C or...
It depends, again.
Right.
If this was a case of an animal that was in a functional state with a behavioral problem and you were going to give a 1 mg,
right,
but you're not sure of the remedy,
right,
then you might do a 200K or 30C.
Right.
Yep.
Okay, uh-huh. Great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I think we have time for probably one more question. So if somebody has one, please go ahead.
Do you have a recommendation for a book about how to use LM potencies? I don't know much about them.
Kim?
Well, the Organon itself has a fairly thorough explanation in the sixth edition of the LM method. And there's also Chowdhury's book on the LM posology approach. But it's fairly well clarified in the Organon. Another work that I'd really recommend, which doesn't exclusively speak about the LM approach of the sixth edition, but talks about the fourth, fifth, and sixth editions in relationship to each other, is a book by Dr. Luc de Schepper called Achieving and Maintaining the Similimum. And I think that's probably the best contemporary work in terms of case management and posology.
Yep. With LMs.
It does discuss LMs as well, but not exclusively. It talks about the split dose approach, the LM approach.
Okay.
And it compares them with, sections from different editions of the Organon.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah, I would highly recommend that book.
Okay, great. Thank you. I got cut off when I was telling you about my dog.
Please go ahead. You were the person who got cut off. Please.
Yeah, my phone just popped me off and somebody else was on the other line. Anyway, what did you hear?
Well, basically the answer we gave was because your one dog had had your older dog had had the stroke and your younger dog had had what happened?
Mange. Real
mange.
Severe.
Okay.
And,
so the bottom line is vaccines weaken the immune system.
Totally.
And so you just have to watch and try to catch things before they go all the way into mange or into stroke. And, again, using things like Reiki, flower essences, or if you knew their constitution at that point, you could have given that.
Yeah. The little Dachshund, when I first got him, he was about 5, and he was just loaded with mange. And I cured him of that with sulfur mainly, but I did also use flower essences for trauma and a bunch of other things, some herbs too, and change of diet. And
so,
he stunk, just terrible.
Right.
Well, but then when he got the rabies, he went back into that again because his total immune system.
See, that's the thing is they'll often go back to symptoms they've had prior.
Yeah.
That's not unusual. And so in that case, you may have thought, I'm afraid this is going to prompt that. So that would have been an instance where you might have given sulfur after the rabies. a single dose if you had thought of that. One book that I want to highly recommend to people, and I meant to check first, Kim, and didn't get quite to the website to make sure you carry it, is Homeopathy, What to Expect by Edward de Buchler. I can never say it well. It's got 101 animal cases.
Ooh.
Very briefly, they're like a paragraph to two paragraph to maybe a page and a half. And so it's just really fun reading and gives you a sense, really, of the power of homeopathy.
What was his name again?
It's the last name is D-E, capital B as in boy, E-U-K-E-L-A-E-R.
Okay.
And remember to go to Whole Health Now. They, you know, they carry all these books, and if they don't have one, they'll get it. They carry my book, The Healthy Animals Journal, so you can order it there. And then the other good book for animals, which gives a whole lot of philosophy and principles, which I think is good, is The Textbook of Veterinary Homeopathy by John Saxton and Peter Gregory.
Well, I was never so happy when I heard Dr. Pitcairn one time, somebody asked him about vaccines, and his answer was clearly no, he didn't believe in them at all.
Right.
And I felt so relieved because I don't either, you know.
That's right. Well, I think we're all in agreement on that.
Well, I want to thank everybody for participating, and especially Christine. I want to thank you again for joining us. It was another absolutely fantastic call, and I know you'll come back and join us again for another one in the near future. Can everybody give Christina a very big thank you for taking the time out of her evening to join us tonight?
Thank you,
Karina. Thank you. Well, thank you to all of you for being
here.
Thank you
so much, and we'll talk
soon.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
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 Bye-bye. Bye-bye.